the Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast. And in today's podcast, I have a good friend of mine called Mark Donnan, who runs a company called Fogo Marketing. And the reason I wanted to ask Mark to come on the call today is that when we're looking at growing wealth in business or property, marketing is one of the most important aspects. You know, there's a saying, nothing gets done until something is sold. And you can't sell anything until you market it. So welcome, Mark. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Daniel. Hi, everyone. Thanks very much for having me on. It's a real privilege and a pleasure to be talking to you this morning.
It's my pleasure. I really appreciate it. I've known you for a number of years now, mostly on Facebook. We've met, we've had a curry and a pint a couple of years ago as well.
I remember.
If you remember that. And that was really interesting. And you were running a marketing event at the time.
That's right.
And I came in and I was stood at the back and I was just blown away by not just the content, because the content's always important, but more than the content, it was the way that you presented it and the way that you delved into the mindset of a potential customer. So this is the psychology of buying, which, yes, when you think about marketing, people go, oh, I'll place an advert on Gumtree or in the newspaper or Facebook ads. Oh, it didn't work. And it's because, yes, there's a disconnect between placing that advert and actually understanding what your customers want. Can you tell me a little bit more about that, please?
Well, it's an interesting concept you bring up, because I mean there's three things really that spring to mind in answer to that that people might find interesting. The first one is understanding what you're going to get when you take the action, because so many of us spend so long learning, and so many of us spend so long trying to get our heads around what marketing can do for your business, that when we take a single unitary action, we expect massive things from it. So, you know, we eventually get around to learning the email systems, and then we send the email and we get a 0.5% open rate and think, well, that was rubbish. Or we put a Facebook ad on and we spend our $50 testing and we get nothing out of the click. So the first thing is really the understanding, and what you've got to understand is, within this psychological spectrum, is what are you going to get from a single unitary action? It's often very little. But where marketing online is really quite useful is you have to understand that there's a cumulative effect that happens both for the brand awareness and for the consumer / prospect's perception of you over time. And this is what a lot of marketers don't get. They don't understand that the single biggest weapon you've got is time. Because you must allow your prospect / client time to reflect, absorb, and learn and sort of soak in the information that they've had. So a single action is going to have very little effect, whereas a cumulative action over a period of time will have a much stronger and ultimately desired effect. And I guess it's no different from sales guys when they're taught how to sell. Like, we might touch on that later, how I know about this, but sales guys are taught to continue to be persistent, because only about 5% of sales are made on the first call, but 80% of sales are made after the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th call. Yep. And it's the same thing with marketing. You must have consistent conformance. You might want to write it down if you're listening to this and taking notes. Consistent conformance to ever-increasing expectations is the single best definition of power marketing. Because over time, if you're demonstrating a consistency to people, you're automatically building that trust. But trust isn't something that you're going to get in one email or one advert. That's why time has to come into effect. And thereupon is the second thing, which is understanding the psychology. And the psychology, what's actually going on in that interaction. And this is where you get some guys... And I quite like, there's a few groups that I'm on the fringes of. I like to keep an eye on what's going on online and certainly in the social circles. And there's a whole bunch of copywriters have got together in a couple of different groups. And I love to listen to them talking, because they're in such a beautiful world within their bubble. They honestly believe that there's nothing like themselves on earth. And it's fantastic. The confidence they've got about their own ability to to say or write the right thing, it is quite an incredible thing to watch, because they're not right. And the reason they're not right is because words move people, but people move themselves. And understanding the psychology of the buyer, understanding the psychology of why people take action, is probably, in my opinion, the single biggest skill you can learn as a new business or as a business looking for growth. And it's the bit that's not taught in marketing. It's understanding. Sorry, I'll just finish that sentence and I'll get off the soapbox. I was just on a roll there. It's understanding in advance the psychological journey that you want to take people on, and then shaping for them through your consistent conformance to ever-increasing expectations, shaping for them the experience you would like them to discover for themselves. That's the important bit, the experience you would like them to discover for themselves. And you can plan it. You were about to say.
I was going to paraphrase, and it's about looking for the trigger points that will move somebody emotionally. So what you're, I think you're saying, is that you would take someone on a journey, and along that journey, you would be enabling yourself to hit them with some trigger points. And when they hit certain trigger points is when a person takes action. Is that right?
Yes, you're almost bang on there. It's part of it, yes. I mean, a better way maybe to describe what I just said is, marketing is, it's like two sides of a coin, effective marketing. On the one side, you have to plant the seed of a need in the mind of your prospect. And a whole bunch of processes, systems, psychologies, and tactical activity is done to plant that seed.
Okay.
Broadcast, that's mainly your broadcast. That's your cast your net wide part, if you like. You got to plant the seed of a need in the minds of your prospect. In order to do that, you've got to be able to bypass their natural filters. And by bypassing their natural filters, it is possible to market to a prospect and it be impossible for them to resist you. It is possible to do that. But that, all that does is plant the seed. What you cannot do is make a prospect, make it impossible for a prospect to resist you to a purchase. That doesn't happen. Everybody thinks you can. You can't hypnotize somebody to buy something, but you can bypass their filters to plant the seed of a need. Then the other side of the coin is effectively watering that. And if you've planted that seed correctly, there's then a second set of processes, actions, and tactics you can follow that water that need. And that's your trigger point part. So on one side, you've got what we call change events in life. We can go back over this if you wish. We've got change events in life. We've got need states. We've got search missions. And we've got buyer missions. And those all encapsulate and frame why they're at the keyboard, or why they're buying. This works offline as well. Why they go to the supermarket. Why you walk into a store to go looking at a mall. It's consistent across all media. It doesn't matter whether it's a keyboard or not. So there's a whole bunch of things that marketers do to influence you when you're in that semi-contemplative state.
Yep.
On the other side of the coin, which is getting you to a sale, involves what you were saying. There are specific buying triggers. There are spending triggers. There are influences that come to the fore when we're in any given situation. And the way I'd describe that is, you think about any mom that goes to do the supermarket shop for the family, and she's on her own. She'll buy for not only herself, she'll buy for her husband, she'll buy for her kids. She'll be a gatekeeper in the decision-making for everything effectively that goes into that basket. She'll be imagining experiences. She'll be future-pacing herself for humor, for fun, for reward, for emotional, for the emotional benefits. Sorry, I forgot the word benefits for a second. The emotional benefits that she's going to get out of that basket of food. And it's exactly the same when people are doing buying. So there's a whole bunch of different, and they're separate, but a whole bunch of different things that can trigger people to buy.
So this could be, when you say that she future paces, so, and I use this in NLP, we would say, what would that look like? What would it feel like in the future? What would you say to yourself once you've achieved the making of the cottage pie and your family's around and your husband enjoys it? What would he say to you, and how would that make you feel? And I think that's what you're referring to there. Is that right?
It is. But obviously, when you're in it, when the shopper or the prospect's in a buying scenario, you don't often get, when a face to face, you can do that, can't you? A salesman can ask those questions. You can't do that through a third party media. You know, the supermarket shelves don't shout that at you when you're walking down. So she's going back into, in the same, she's going back into her memory, her short-term memory and her predictive memory, and she's pulling out those images and constructing for herself what that means.
Yeah.
And that's what marketing can do. So the cottage pie advertiser will have planted that seed in her knee, seed in her mind by his advertising if she recognizes the brand of that particular product she wants to buy. And it's no different online. It's just, it's slightly different in the way that the levers are used, but the process is exactly the same.
Can you give me an example of that from start to finish? Not obviously massively in depth, but and obviously from a client confidentiality perspective, you have to be careful as well. But just, you know, can you give me an example of a headline that would entice someone and just talk to me about the psychology behind that headline?
A headline? Well, a headline is really just your opener to you know, an effective campaign. We ran a campaign recently in conjunction with a client who knew that they were being interviewed, or they were going to be interviewed on a TV sports channel.
Yeah.
And he knew in advance he was being featured, quite a few months in advance he was going to be featured on this sports channel, which, you know, obviously huge opportunity to harvest the fact that he was getting a 15-minute slot or a 10-minute slot on an American coast-to-coast national sports channel.
Yeah.
But we spent like 6 months. We had been already building in advance of him getting this information, a whole big sequence and funnel. And ultimately, he went from getting, just before he went on, we were working on the funnel, and he was getting about 2 to 3 sales at about $1,200 a time, just normally from his site, which is quite nice.
Yeah.
And then because we built this entire sequence, I think he got something. I mean, I'll need to go and check my numbers. It is a matter of record. I have it on online somewhere. But it was certainly in the magnitude of over 100 sales that night. Because,
wow.
Because, well, he was featured on TV, which is like, yeah, anybody could do that if they're featured on TV. But that's not the case. We built a specific funnel sequence that allowed the people who were curious to come all the way through to booking their kid on a baseball camp in Texas, all from all over the country. So there was an opportunity, of course, a huge part had been done for us by the fact that it was being broadcast, but we still had to convert those people that were semi-interested or interested in wanting to know more into actual purchasers. So the headline aspect of that really was more about tying the expectation they had to the delivery that they were going to have. And of course, what expectation are they going to have if they've heard of you or if they've seen you? And it's the same if you've got an advertisement on Facebook. You make a promise or you present yourself in a certain way. And when they then come to follow up with you, you must be consistent and deliver that promise. You have to deliver exactly what they came for. And what we
done
is we laid down, the secret that we'd done was we understood, and this is the most important part, I guess, of everything that I would do with a client, it's understanding their segmentation. It's not about the fancy words in the copywriting. We'll touch on that later. But it's about understanding upfront the segmentation of the people that are coming or that you want to attract to come to your site. So we laid...
How do you define a segment?
A segment is... a segment... Well, some people you'll see online, they talk about avatars, or they talk about your ideal client, or they talk about, you know, trying to understand the profile, the demographic profile, and all these things are helpful, but they don't go far enough. They're like the chapter 101 of marketing textbooks. A segment of people are a group of, basically they're a big enough grouping of people that are likely to share common psychological tendencies sufficient to be able to plan in advance and put enough effort behind your marketing that there are a reasonable number of people going to come through the process and go through the process that you're about to follow. And the beautiful thing about doing segmentation properly is, you know, a 50-year-old man in Ohio could at one point in time have exactly the same psychological requirement as an 18-year-old student in Singapore. It's not about age, it's not about sex, it's not about gender, it's about psychological profiling, and it's about the need and the requirement of that person to achieve what they're setting out to try and achieve. So segmentation is really about having a good insight into what moves people, and then you allow the people to move through your flow. And of course, you've got to consistently check it because it's only ever, unless you've got big data, it's only ever narrowing down your options.
So for someone listening then, how would, and we have a mixture of people who listen, from property investors to people who own businesses that are doing, you know, millions of pounds every year. So we've got a really good mix, and also very like small businesses, you know, single owners and that sort of thing. So for someone to start doing their marketing efficiently, what would be the top things that they need to do?
There's really nine things that in order to not waste money and lose money, there's nine things that you need to get right. The first one is your marketing strategy. You've got to understand from a strategic perspective what you're doing. And it's the bit where most people lose money because they don't think about what is required. They just crack on because they want a result, and then they wonder why they didn't get the result they wanted. Okay. You know, this ready, fire, aim sort of mentality, which has its place, but with digital marketing, you need to do it right. You've just got to do it right. So the first thing is all about understanding your market, your strategy. So how do you do that? You look at your keywords, you look at your competitors, you look at what your competitors are doing online. There are ways to do that, by the way. There are ways to do that in an easy way, or there are ways to do that in a hard way. We've got some free resources on our website that can help people out with that, so that they can go there and check that out if they want to know a little bit.
What's the website address?
It's Froggo Marketing, Froggo, froggomarketing.com. We got a whole bunch of resources there to help people understand this in a little bit more detail. But the first thing is your marketing strategy. The second thing you've got to do is then actually, believe it or not, you've got to sit and plan out how that strategy is going to be affected. And that's where you start thinking about your funnel design. You start thinking about the copy that you're going to create. You're going to start thinking about the profiling of people that you're going through. And you have to, and again, there's a bunch of templates and there's a bunch of sequences you can go through to do your effective planning. Now, the next three things are very commonly talked about online, and I'm not unique in the way that these things are done, but it's obviously choosing your social media channel. It's creating your digital assets and creating actually making the content. And then, of course, this bit we talked about earlier, which is the psychological profiling and understanding the psychology of what you're trying to achieve while you do those two things. Where am I now? Am I the fifth? The sixth thing is all about your platform. And platforms are no longer websites. Websites are a part of the platform, but they're not the only part. But within a website as a main part of your platform, you've got to think about the layout, the design, the style of pages you've got, the way the page is flowing. And it's really worth spending a little bit, if there's any budget left at this point, getting someone to uniquely design it, you know, rather than you're trying to do it yourself and believe you're saving money, because effectively you're not if you're trying to do it yourself. Then you come back to you've got this conversion environment that hangs off a website, and then the next one is obviously email marketing is an important part of that, and then the final one is understanding your conversion analysis and understanding what your numbers are telling you, what your sales numbers, what your Google Analytics, or what your heat mapping, are they telling you the story that you set out with your plan?
Yeah.
Or are they telling you that what you wrote didn't work, or why didn't it work? Because within that nine-step sequence, there will be percentages from box to box, and there'll be conversions from box to box, and there'll be mistakes from box to box, and your numbers will tell you where to look, where you need to go back and fix it.
I find it interesting that most people actually don't look at the numbers at all for running stuff, and then all they know is it's either worked or it hasn't. They can't tell me which particular aspect worked. They just know it worked or it didn't, and it's because they're not actually interrogating those numbers and what we're hoping to achieve from those numbers.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with being intuitive. I mean, a lot of guys are very talented, and I'm just not like that. You know, I am... a more dyed-in-the-wool old-style marketer, where I know there's a cause and an effect, and I know that something happened in the middle, and I need to understand what the bit in the middle was. And therefore, just like a factory line's got production, and every time a conveyor belt in a production line, if you've never been in a factory, you have to imagine this, a conveyor belt joins to another conveyor belt, and the product moves from belt to belt. Well, in the middle bit, where the two belts join together, it's called a bullnose, and that's where all the problems in a factory happen, on the bullnose, when you're converting from one belt to another. And it's the same with human nature, and it's the same with funnels, it's the same with your digital marketing. All your leakage, all your all the people exiting. It all happens when they go from page to page, or they go from click to click, or they go from experience to experience. And if it's not consistent, or if it's boring them, or if it's not giving them what they want, you've got four or five pages in now, and if they're not getting it, they're gone. And you can design it. You can plan for an effective transfer from bullnose to bullnose.
Without a loss of efficiency as well.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to lose the majority of people in a funnel. And that's the thing other people don't understand. You know, typically, even people like Amazon, and the average numbers on an e-commerce store are, you're only going to get 4% of people in situ. 4% of the people who might buy will buy today. And, you know, and that's if you're hitting all the things right, you get a maximum of 4%. And most internet marketers focus on promotion. Most internet marketing is promotion. It's instant sale. It's trying to get the purchase today. And, you know, it's interruption marketing. It's pattern interrupt. It's, you know, taking someone down another line and trying to get them to get the impulsive credit card out in order for them to buy. And everybody forgets about the other 96% of people who are also strong contenders to buy from you, but not today.
Yeah.
So we teach our businesses and clients to focus on the 96, not the 4, because you're going to get the 4 anyway if you do it right.
Of course you are. And that just comes from maintaining that consistency in message, consistency in marketing that message out to the market.
It does.
And it's so interesting, because I remember when I first started buying property, this was about 17 years ago, Mark. I know I don't look old enough, but I'd not just finished my paper round. I was 26 when I got my first house, and we were dropping leaflets. In fact, 17 years ago, before this became popular and before gurus were teaching it, this is what we did. And we were also placing adverts in newspapers. And so we would just place one advert, like a full page, and then wonder why it didn't work.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, obviously now looking back, it's obvious as to why. But that consistency was just completely off. And also, we were then trying to sell off the page to about 4% that you've just talked about,
yeah,
rather than actually building up a sales funnel. So for someone who's listening then, who currently is trying to sell to about 4% off the page, what are the steps that they need to implement? So I'm guessing, like, drive people to the website, get like AWeber or MailChimp email system in place. What are the other steps that are needed in order to be able to sell to that 96%?
For the 96 or the 4, because they're quite different.
To the 96. So what you do with your clients is, you're going to get the 4 anyway, right? Because it's just going to happen. But you specifically target the 96,
yes.
And I think that's probably where most businesses make the mistake, because they're just going for the 4%. Whereas actually, if they flipped it and just aim for the 96, as you say quite rightly, they will get the 4% anyway, plus then they'll get all the other stuff.
Yeah. So
what are the parts or the ingredients that are required in a business to make that happen?
Well, as you may know that old sales adage, where you take people from awareness, interest, desire, and action. It sort of follows that path a little bit. And if you think about your internet marketing and your funnel design, it helps to think about little anachronisms like that. So when if you look at it, awareness and interest. Your broadcasting and your broadcast media brings people back to your site, whether you buy it, buy traffic, whether you do it organically, whether you're advertising on paid media, you know, whether you're doing referrals, getting other people to mail for you, or whether you've got affiliate things set up. There's a bunch of different ways that you can get people to come to you, and each of them are different. Each of them are very different. So I'll give you an example. If you're doing affiliate, if you're getting affiliates to mail for you, and they're saying, hey, you know, hey, Daniel's got this great offer, you know, you really want to go and check him out, and it's to people that know me, then they're going to there's an establishment of trust in advance, of course. So that's why affiliates want a little bit of margin. So provided I'm being consistent that Daniel's offer is really good, then, you know, they're going to click on that. Now, with those people, you don't have to go through all the preamble. You can just go to a straight squeeze page, where you've got an email opt-in box or a download box masking an email opt-in box as a pop-up, and you should get about 30 to 50% conversion just off a straight squeeze page. No problem if the affiliate's got a decent relationship with their list. Now, that doesn't work at all for organic traffic coming to a website. That's just not going to happen. It definitely won't happen with paid media, and in fact, Google and Facebook won't let you put just a straight squeeze page up. They don't like it. And your conversion rates on something like that would be less than 0.5%. So you've got to understand the origin of the traffic, and you've got to understand how each part of that traffic needs to come into, effectively, your desire section.
Yeah.
So they create your awareness and interest, and then you go through a segmentation gateway, and the segmentation gateway just allows you, like the front page of your website, and it's a bit like a hotel lobby. There's lots of places you can go in a hotel from the lobby, and they'll go based on mission. And that's what you do with your homepage. You give them an opportunity and guide them with clear signposts where they could go next if they had the desire to do so. And then
isn't there a problem on having that you're trying to do all things to all people just on the homepage? How would you make that more efficient?
Well, the design of the homepage is important. I mean, whatever you're promoting or whatever the lowest hanging fruit or the easiest converting opportunity you've got, the biggest problem that you're solving as a business,
yeah.
You put that above the fold and you make that the only thing they can see apart from maybe some primary navigation. And then the scrollers will go down a wee bit more and you give them some more information. But people like me, and I think like you, Daniel, I don't scroll a lot. I'm like, I can make my mind up really quickly, and whether I like it or I don't like it really quickly. But I'm only 25% of the population. There's another 75% of people learn a completely different way to me. They need to see the proof, the evidence, the scrolling. You know, there's lots of different personalities involved. So your homepage has to account for all personalities because you're not stood in front of them reading their eyes and able to help them with that decision.
Yeah.
What you can do, though, is on your second click, on your second page, you obviously, therefore, on your homepage, you only really want curiosity. You don't want to be solving problems. You want to be going, hey, here's a signpost to the answer to the thing you were looking for. Click this button. All you really want to do on your homepage is sell the click to the button, nothing else. A nice, strong visual, a nice opportunity, a nice headline. But what you're selling on the homepage isn't the solution to the problem they're looking for. The homepage is just selling the click. The next page is where you've got to get it right on the solution. And typically, one thing that we've been testing a lot recently, one thing that you might find really helpful is on the sales pages, effectively, your second click page, your information page, doesn't matter what design style you choose, because they could be a blog style, they could be a sales page style, they could be a video sales letter style. There's a bunch of different ways that you can present the solution to that image. But what you can do is you can cookie that home page. So if they come through and they click, or they've opted in and they get redirected to the click, you can have banners above the fold. So we'll often have, if a client's opted in, and we'll do this for our clients, if a prospect opts in from the home page, they get redirected to the sales page or to the information content page, and they don't see any more banners. But because the design of those pages is designed to sell, we also send traffic directly to them, not coming from the home page. So if they go directly to the second page, we put a banner above the fold, which entices and encourages the opt-in for the free thing they missed because they didn't come from the home page. And you can write various scripts that allow you to show or not show the banner depending on the journey that your prospect has had through your website. And of course, to make that work, you've really got to be tracking the behavior, track all the clicks, track who's going where and what and why.
Got it. And on that page two solution as well, when they get to that page two, would you put like a tracking pixel on that so then you can retarget them once they leave that website and not buy? Then we go back onto Facebook so you can follow them around?
Sometimes. It depends on whether I'm selling on that second page or not. More often than not, we don't sell on the second page, because the second page, I'm really just sort of establishing that credibility, and my agenda is to build rapport and trust. So I'll banner an enticement on the second page to a sales page. Sometimes it's a direct sales page. You know, you can't have people clicking forever. But most often, it's an enticement to click for the people like me, and I think like you, who'll just click intuitively anyway. But this is really where you're establishing the rapport. Some people use video sales letters to great effect. We've tested long form, which is where you just endlessly scroll. We have strong opinions that they don't work, but I'm in direct opposition to some very strong friends in the personal development market that believe they do work.
Jay Abraham, for example, loves those long sales letters.
Yeah,
But I think the marketplace is changing constantly anyway. What's interesting is the technology's changed so much from 10 years ago. It's fundamentally changed the landscape of marketing. But what hasn't changed is the underneath psychological reasons for people buying and getting interested.
That's very true.
So what's the biggest number one problem that you see people making when they're trying to start their own marketing?
That's a great question. The number one problem I see people make when they start their own... You know what? I see a lot of websites and I see a lot of environments, you know, from people that come to us as a business. And they've had a go. You know, I really like the fact that a lot of them, they've had a go, but it's incomplete. They, you know, they've been to a seminar or they've read a book or they've seen a couple of webinars and they've got hyped up and excited by the content of that presenter. I mean, and you know, I'm as guilty of it as anybody, you know, because you can't present the entire spectrum in a 90-minute or a 60-minute position. But they've had a go, but they've given up too quickly. They've not understood the trade-off between time and money. That would be effectively the main thing that I would see. Some people mistakenly believe that by learning WordPress and doing it themselves, they're saving themselves money. And actually, they're not. They're stopping themselves from selling, and they're learning a useless skill that they don't need to have, because ultimately, if they became successful at doing that and grew their business, they move into the second thing I think you were mentioning earlier on about systems. And they won't have time to do the technical implementation of the marketing they spent all their time learning in the beginning. And they're just choking their own ability to grow their business.
Yeah. We've got a saying, poor people spend time to save money. Wealthy people, they will spend money to save time. And I've been guilty of it myself. You know, I have. And I think I still am to some extent, because I still do all my own stuff. But actually, I'm at the stage where I don't really want to be doing it myself. I can't even be bothered doing it. I'm not even... It used to excite me 5 years ago, 3 years ago. Now, it's just like, oh, no, we're just going to outsource that and get someone else to do it. And actually, that's exactly what should happen.
Yeah.
In most businesses. Why are business owners, plumbers, why are they doing their own marketing? And I think part of it is like, well, Facebook is free, so why am I paying someone else to market on Facebook when I can do it myself? And it's like, well, it's not free, is it?
Yeah. I mean, it's a case of you're right in what you said at the beginning of our conversation. You know, I believe the same thing. I believe marketing and sales can solve every problem in a business. I really do, because it gives you options. It gives you a bigger. But if you do it right, it gives you a bigger headache than you had at the beginning. But it's a nice headache to have. It's how do I cope with the influx of business? And it is the number one thing that we're often asked to tackle. I'm not getting enough business, or I'm not converting enough of the people that are coming to my business, or unfortunately sometimes I've been badly burned by someone else, and you know, I'm warily wanting to know how I can go about fixing that.
There's a lot of instant marketing consultants, isn't there, who are all experts in a week.
You know, the thing about that is, I mean, in any industry, in any market where, you know, let's face it, there's very low barriers to entry for anybody to become a marketing consultant. All they need is a laptop and a beach. And I'm not being funny to you, because I know that you actually are a real marketer. You know, not many people get to the point where they can enjoy a pool, they can enjoy a nice lifestyle as well as do their work. You know, you're one of the very few people that I know that has actually cracked that code and made the lifestyle change.
Interestingly, Matt, that still takes me by surprise, but I'm the only one that I know as well who lives that lifestyle. And when people come out to the villa, and we have guests coming out and clients and so on, they can't believe just how little work we actually do for the results that we actually get. And all these people sort of market themselves as being financially free or residual income and don't have to work. I can work from a hammock on the beach, but none of them do.
Yeah.
I find it really interesting that out of all my peer group, and this is interesting as a property coach, I'm the only property coach in the UK who's not in the UK, because I live at the villa in Spain, whereas all the others are doing 50, 60 hours weeks, and it's crazy. You know, I never understood that really.
I don't know much about your primary market. Obviously, I was on the fringes of it. I know a few guys in that have been involved in it over the years. And it does fascinate me that, I mean, the whole property thing fascinates me, you know, period. It's just not my radar at all. But it does.
Do you know the only reason we're in property? It could be seashells for all we care. But the only reason we're in property is it generates cash every month.
Uh-huh.
And that's the only reason for it. And if you were thinking about getting into property, the sort of stuff that we would do for you wouldn't be like buying, doing up and selling. Why would you do that? You would be buying and holding for the next 25 years, and we'd put it into a trust, ready for your kids to pass on.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't die when you die, like a pension does, for example. You can pass your wealth on.
So what brings people into, what is it that attracts people into the property market, that, and how does that over, I'm sorry, you're interviewing me, but how does that overlap with online marketing then?
Because they need to go out and sometimes find motivated sellers. So a motivated seller is someone who, we've got a 100 grand house, but we're going through some troubles. They're about to be repossessed tomorrow, let's say. And so we can go in and represent them in court and stop the repossession, but we would buy their property from them. We'd pay the 70 grand mortgage off, the £5,000 worth of credit card debt. So we end up with a house for 75 that's worth 100. We've helped that person out of their predicament, which is bankruptcy, effectively, repossessed and so on, which affects them for a lot longer. Obviously, they might be in arrears for a couple of months, but that's not as bad as actually going repossessed, for example, and that can be repaired fairly quickly over the next year or two. But it helps that person not go bust and have that hanging over them for a whole 6 years. From our point of view, the question is, for that type of client, how do we get the fact that they can buy a house for cash, how do we get that message out to the population so that they know if they get into trouble or they're in negative equity, let's say, and they can't sell the house because there's not enough money in the house to cover the mortgage, we can take a lease option on that. So we would lease the property from them for 10 years with an agreed buy price. You know, so if it's worth 110 and the mortgage is 120, we'll buy it for 120 in 10 years' time because hopefully the prices have gone up. So the getting access to those people who are in trouble right now and explaining to them that actually you don't have to go bust. There is a solution that will solve that. It's not the best solution for you, but it's better than going bust. So that's how we would do it.
That's interesting. I mean, I don't know if you knew about me. I used to own an insolvency practice.
Right.
And I established one of the founding companies that it still exists today. I successfully sold it, as you know, but one of the founding companies that started to regulate the debt management industry.
Yeah.
And I luckily got to go to some consultations at the House of Lords and at the House of Commons, as there was a big debate between the mortgage industry, which obviously regulated lending, and the debt management industry, which was, you know, seen as Satan by the establishment because it was unregulated and dealing with the credit cards. The times have changed now, obviously, since I had that. But part of the consultations that I was having with the guys at the House of Lords was this fact that a mortgage lender will often send a debt management counsellor into a property, but they can't talk about anything else other than that regulated debt. They weren't allowed to talk about the spectrum of anything else. And then, of course, then an unregulated debt management advisor ran by companies such as the one I had would go in and talk about everything. And obviously the credit card guys were squeezed in the middle because, you know, the priority debts and non-priority debts were obviously handled a bit differently. So I do understand that market that you're in, but getting to people in that industry would probably be through those two routes, the debt management counsellors, the credit advice bureau. So I'm interested to know how a property niche can even start to make headway in there when there's so many other people fighting for that person's attention, unless you had joint ventures or strategic alliances with those businesses.
Yeah, well, I'll give you an example, and that is one potential, is that you can align yourself with a debt management company and they can pass your leads and so on, and I think some of them do it and they actually sell you the leads anyway. But the other route to market, for a lot of investors who are wanting to find that type of deal, they would just do leaflet drops.
Oh.
And on a leaflet drop, we would drive them to a squeeze page, and the squeeze page would be, so our leaflet would say something like, Discover how to sell your house in days. Notice we don't say how many days, by the way. We just say in days because we don't want to be, we don't want to upset the Advertising Standards Authority by saying 7 days in case we can't. So we say days. So it could be a billion days. It could be 5 days. Nobody knows. But so we just like miss that number off. So they would then go to a squeeze page. They get a document that then gets downloaded. And I created that about 10 years ago. I've had to edit it because some of the rules have changed. You can't do sale and rent back and so on. But we just use the same document. But then we've got the information we need because then we've got postcode, approximate value of property, telephone number. So they'd get the document and then we'd phone them up and we'd go, so yeah, you've downloaded how to sell your house in days. And we use that same strategy for estate agents as well, by the way.
That would work.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, really. So, but then the other side of the coin here is that a lot of people who want to get into property have just got the money for deposits.
Right.
So it's there's two angles on property. The first one is you buy something and then you rent it out for the long term.
Yeah.
And then the next bit is, or you might buy and sell or whatever that happens to be. But then, and that's long-term wealth building. That's what we would call that. The next bit is trading. Now, you might be trading either a property, but more likely people who've got no money will be trading deals. So they'll be like, well, I've got this house, it's worth 100, it's only 75, my sourcing fee is £2,000. So they would sell that to someone who has got the money, and they would become a property sourcer.
Uh-huh.
And they'd sell 20 of those deals over the course of a year, and they'd get onto the housing ladder, and then would buy, do up and sell, make another 10, and then we've got 30, and it's about increasing that capital so that they can keep on investing. And it is slow to begin with, if you're on that path, But we've got a download on my website that shows people how to do it in 5 years flat, be financially free without buying a single property, just using lease options that pay £200 a month.
And interesting.
It goes really slow to begin with, and then it accelerates, and it accelerates exponentially as well, because you get better at what you're doing, you get better at negotiating, your advertising increases its efficiency, because hopefully you're checking the numbers, which most people don't do. So one of the reasons why we get someone who's into marketing is because most people just haven't got a bloody clue about it from a property point of view, and they need that help. But the other angle is the podcast is designed to do three things. It's designed to help people cut costs. Well, that's not relevant here. It's designed to help people generate cash. Well, that is relevant because if they can start selling some of these sourcing deals, awesome, they're generating cash. And the third bit is the difference between the money that they've saved and the money that they've made, we invest that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's invest the rest. And so this interview really comes under number two. How do we help people generate more cash? And I'm always uncomfortable when someone, I've got a job and I'm doing property and I'm making £2,000 a month, I'm leaving my job. And I'm like, whoa, hold on a minute. What if something goes wrong? You're screwed, you know? If a house is empty at £500, now you've only got £1,500. What if a boiler goes at £2,500? So it's like, why not set up a business? And so that's what we want people to do. We want people to be able to generate cash as well as having long-term wealth.
I understand.
Because it doesn't work.
Well, what digital lets them have is, you know, you need to make an investment in the right kind of digital architecture in the same way that you have to in property. You can't do this on the cheap, and you can't do this on the fly. But what you can do with digital, what marketing allows you to do online, is it does allow you to build your architecture that gets leveraged and reused. So, you know, once you've built a funnel that works, it gets reused again. And as you've just said to me there, you know, you're using documentation that's 10 years old, but still relevant. And you've edited a few times, but you wrote the document once, edited a few times to change some rules, but you're reusing and leveraging that all the time. And that's
a digital asset.
That's exactly it. So what a citation plan would allow somebody in starting out in that business and possibly listening, what segmentation allows you to do is, you know, it is entirely possible for you to have, let's say for the sake of argument, five subcategories of motivated sellers. There'll be five different reasons why those motivated sellers are motivated to sell in the first place. And it's not only...
There are actually four, and I'll tell you what they are, so if you can remember them. We call it the four Ds.
Okay.
So it's death, departure, as in going overseas, divorce, and debt.
Right, what you're describing are what
and
I...
And that's the end of part one. Make sure you listen to part two.
The Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.